Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name's Kate Davis.
Amazing. And you don't have to say, like, I'm Kate Davis and I'm in the so-and-so band.
Yeah. That's just boring.
You're just Kate Davis.
Yeah.
That's it.
I am who I am.
You are who you are. You be who you be.
Yeah.
We've got your Portland. We've got your Conservatory of Music. We've got all sorts of unrest. We've got all... But I like to start these kind of the same way. And here's what I want to know. And this is kind of like the breath mint question. And then we'll go dark and deep.
Great.
What are you amazed so far? Because you've done a fair amount of press around this trophy thing.
Yeah.
What are you amazed so far that either no one has asked you or you wish someone would?
Well, I guess no one's asked me only because... I haven't been in a position yet where anyone's asked, but I've been amazed at the number of young people who have been coming out to the shows and getting up into the front, jumping and mouthing every word to every song.
Wow, that's really...
And the album had been out for maybe a week when this happened.
So and you didn't like leak anything.
Well, I put singles out, but right. It was amazing to me how stoked people were about it so soon.
Well, I maybe because the music's good. Well,
hopefully. I mean, there were also 2 6-year-olds at my San Francisco show the other day who were like quite happy to mouth along to the explicit language. Like it was adorable, but it was very surprising to me. But it just it makes it interesting for me as a performer and as someone who's constantly sharing just to see what resonates with people.
Did you go to college before going to the conservatory, or was it the same?
It's the same thing.
It was the same thing.
Yeah, I went to a music school for college to get a degree. It was the Manhattan School of Music.
Right.
And that was a 4-year program. And it was as if, you know, it was just like any other college program where you leave and, you know, you're in high school and then you get into college, you move to wherever you're going and then you screw around a little bit and you try to do as well as you can. And
But the bigger thing is these are schools with methodologies and pedagogy and, you know, and all those other oggies, right?
Yeah, right.
There's a lot there. Were you looking for focus and direction at that moment when you graduated high school?
Well, the interesting thing is that when I was growing up, I was always encouraged to follow a certain path because of the skills that I exhibited being a young person.
Being young, yes.
Yeah, and I think my parents were both really interested in music. They had not necessarily studied music, but like had been in a band together and always made music a really important part of their lives, whether it was just like, we love this album or this makes us feel a certain way and we want our children to be able to have the opportunity to be expressive. And so when I was young, I was really good at music. Like my mom really wanted me to play violin because she wanted to play violin, but it conflicted with her book club meetings. So she wasn't able to do it. So when I was young, she just handed me a violin and said, we're going to do this. And I was like, I guess I have no choice. Cool.
Do you ever feel, I'm going deep here for a second.
Yeah, let's go deep.
Do you ever feel psychologically that might not have been the best move as a parent?
You know what? It was what they knew. It's what they thought was best for me.
Fair game.
I've kind of been reflecting a lot since this album came out and thinking about my journey to this point. And I realized that it took me a really, really long time to be able to think for myself or to come up with my own ideas about what I wanted, who I wanted to be, and the kind of future that I really wanted. I think a lot of my high school and college years were really informed by like the direction my parents saw for me. And
right.
And, you know, I think encouraging music is kind of risky as a parent because you want to make sure your kid can make a living. So, yeah, and like my dad was really into like business, like he was a businessman, and so he looked at my life and said, okay, how are we going to make this lucrative? How do we turn what you're doing, what we've encouraged you to do, what we've put all this money behind to make you more money so that you can be successful?
Really interesting.
Yeah, and it put me in a situation where I didn't really have a lot of say. I knew I loved music, and it was something that I was appreciative that I was able to do so seriously and be able to do without anyone saying like, oh, well, you know, you have to go to college and get a real degree or anything like that. My parents were really supportive and would drive me to gigs and help me make albums and that kind of stuff. But it wasn't my idea.
At a conservatory and the practice and the meter and the rules. And when did you know? When did you know that a switch was going to flip?
I think I was very lucky. And I think that my parents did a really great job setting it all up, you know? And I...
Yeah, you had the support.
I had a lot of support. And I think without that, nothing happens. And so for that, I'm super grateful. But at the same time, I remember it was 2009. It was right around when like iTunes started to be a thing in my life. And
wow,
I was,
10 years ago.
Yeah. And I think I was just perusing iTunes, just seeing what was out there. And I think I had an iTunes gift card. And for some reason, I came across an album called Actor by St. Vincent. But I listened to it and I could tell that she clearly had a lot of background in music. She had learned music in a technical way.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And she was writing songs and recording these tracks that were not simple. Like they were interesting and they had a lot of, they were just like full of music, you know? And I remember listening to that and feeling that switch and realizing that type of expression was what I ultimately wanted, or what it was like the kind of thing where I realized that that's what would make me feel liberated, as opposed to going through the motions of playing jazz gigs as a character almost and singing other people's songs, like kind of almost being like a prisoner of the genre or the just like the artists who had come before me, there was almost like a path and I was on a moving train. And it was like, we are going to go through the motions to help you become the next Diana Krall. We're going to go through the motions to help you become the next, you know, well-paid jazzy singer.
But you didn't,
who plays bass or whatever.
Right. But you didn't get right to this immediately, right? Postmodern jukebox. It took you a long time to kind of get to what this is. So,
yeah. I'll tell you why. When I was in college, it was hard for me to live two lives, but it ended up being the case. Like I would, you know, fulfill my school requirements, do my homework, and then I would go back to my single dorm room and I would write music and I would mess around with my stupid little P bass and be like, oh, this is so much cooler than like the crap I have to play for improv class and all, you know. It's like I felt like I had two very different parts of my life, and the part in my dorm room writing music was very secret. Because all of my peers at school were kind of like, what?
Yeah, why would you want to do that?
Why would you do that? And I think also a lot of people saw a lot of promise for me as a jazz musician. So they were like, why would you write songs? And like, why would you do that?
As opposed to riffs.
Well, and I think also there were a lot of people who were like, well, why don't you just like write music that makes sense for where you are aesthetically? And I was like, well, I don't actually want to be here aesthetically. I want to...
That's a great term. Where you... We need a t-shirt that says, I am here aesthetically. It's like, wow, aesthetics in music.
Well, and I think when you're young and you're spoon-fed recordings and a genre and like a style and a path.
The Masters, the Great American Songbook.
Yeah,
right,
whatever it is. And there's so much within that is relevant and beautiful and important within the history.
Sure.
It just all happened at that time. And it was my opinion that I would never, ever be able to make a better record than Frank Sinatra's In the Wee Small Hours. That was my actual thinking. I was like, why am I going to all this effort to just try to recreate something that was done back in this day when it was relevant and it was considered pop music and it was done at a high level that will just never be matched because we live in a different time. We don't have the same influences of the same society, the same culture, the same structure. That all led to that moment in time when that was created. And anything I do now in that vein is just going to sound like a B-rate version of that.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So yeah. This was my mindset the whole, all through college. I was just trying to do whatever I could to get through it and to also find the time to write songs, explore different genres, listen to as much music as I could, and also take an approach as I had with jazz as a student where I would just learn other music, like learn how to play it, learn how to emulate other singers. I had this massive Jeff Buckley phase when I was like a junior in college. Someone was like, hey, have you ever heard of, you know what it was? Somebody was like, there's this song, this Nina Simone song called Lilac Wine. And there's a guy named Jeff Buckley who sang it. And I checked it out.
And you're like, well, okay, can I correct your history, please?
Well, and I found Grace.
Yes.
And it just turned my world upside down. Because here was someone who was a virtuoso in his own right.
Sure.
But had taken that skill and that talent and that dedication to music and found a home, a genre home, or just an aesthetic that worked at that time, worked for him and his career, and like worked for his vibe, you know? Like it matched who he was and it seemed authentic and it shook everybody up back then. And for me, also, like, I don't know. I mean, just to hear someone sing so expressively, but within the context of like rock music, that was one of the first times that I had a moment with myself where it was just like, the things I like about jazz in that you can be expressive and be bendy and weird and creepy and express emotion with your voice, like that happens. That's not specific to a genre. And I know I'm really late to the game for having only figured it out then, but.
Tell me the trajectory. I haven't had Sharon on, but I've certainly have played 17. I've certainly played a lot of her music and I've seen her multiple times. She's on the list to get together with and schedules never seem to align.
Yeah.
But how did you get there? How did that happen?
I got to meet Sharon because I was asked to be a music director at an event that was going on at Sundance the year that the Nina Simone documentary came out. So Leon Bridges was one of the musical guests, and this is kind of before his career took off.
Right.
But I had management at the time that was aware that Leon shared management with Sharon. They knew that my heart was really in writing and being a singer-songwriter and making an indie record. And like, while I wasn't necessarily like rocking back then, like they knew that I had like a top list of people who were my heroes. And when they found out that that was that connection, they reached out to her management and just said, you know, would she ever be down with sitting and talking to Kate? And she said, sure, and was so warm and open and just kind to me. And we became friends. And then there came a time where I think she was interested in starting to write with other people.
Wow.
And then we got together and...
And voila.
And voila, yeah. So in the meantime, I started working with this producer named Tim Bright, and I shared all my songs with him. He was really a believer in my writing and what I was doing and had come from just a total like New York City rock world. And I think it was the best thing that could have happened because I was coming from a music institution world. I was coming from having learned all of this music in one universe. And he represented music from another universe that I was really, really trying to understand and become a part of. And so I feel like in a lot of ways, getting to work with him was like me going to like rock boot camp in a sense.
Yeah, it's like going to the conservatory for
indie rock or
for
something.
Indie rock, yeah, or and, whatever it is.
And he was, yeah. It's funny because I think his wife had insisted that he have a year of yes. And I met him through a manager that I had at the time, and he came to a show and was like, you know, into the songs and stuff. And then he was like, maybe we should get together and record some stuff. And I think because he was under this year of yes agreement, he had to be open to new things and new ideas and took a chance on me.
I need to embrace this year of yes.
Yeah, the year of yes. You know what? This is my year of yes.
Doing what it takes to win.
Yeah.
Talking about desire. And the symbol of a trophy. Yep. People get trophies for football. They get trophy for bowling. They mm-hmm. get trophy for track meets. But a trophy for life. Is this you? Did you feel like you were, when you were younger, that you kind of got the trophy for being the musician that you didn't turn out to be? Or did you set out to write these songs kind of as a, obviously they've got you in them. Your dad's in there. I mean, life is in there.
I once was able to work with a songwriter who I admire, who told me that without being able to share other people's stories, you are not doing anybody any favors. You're not doing any service to anyone because no one cares about your stupid mundane existence. And so for me, I found that writing was more interesting and more fulfilling when I would look at the world around me and try not to just write from a really, confessional, personal, whiny place.
Right.
And I was able to kind of see the way that, you know, like people watching is very interesting because you see, you know, I love watching people interact or seeing the way that, you know, a woman treats a man in the street. Like, I wonder, are they together? Are they not? Are they on a first date? Like, there's a lot of interesting stories that you can kind of create in your own mind, but also you insert yourself into those, and then you are able to just have a different perspective on humanity and just the you know, like there's.
So you're not that kid in the cloud video.
Well, part of me is. I have a friend out here in LA who made a movie with her family called The Year of Spectacular Men. Mm-hmm. And she and I met at a jazz camp at the Brubeck Institute like in 2007. So we're old friends and we've stayed in each other's lives. And it's just been, it's amazing to grow up with people and watch them do amazing things. You know, like that's just life. It's a cool part of life. But she made a movie with her family. And I had made some recordings of some of my songs that were pretty much demos. And she asked me, can I use some of these songs in my movie?
And I said, you were like, oh, yeah.
Of course. And one of the songs in the movie was Rabbits. And by the time the movie soundtrack came out, I had recorded my album through Kickstarter. And so she asked if I could use the updated recording for the movie soundtrack. And I said, absolutely, of course. I thought at the time it would be a cool way to have one track that was available so that even though, like, so the Kickstarter folks were able to enjoy the album that they basically helped make, but there was one little teaser that was kind of out there in the world by way of this movie that could just kind of represent where I was at.
To and the help non-Kickstarter people. Folks, to the rest of the world.
Exactly. Yeah. And I felt like that was important since I had this kind of confusing past and people had expectations for me. And it felt good to be able to say, okay, not that anyone's going to care, but like, this is what I am into and this is who I'd like to be.
The record's out there, you're touring, you know, and you're paying your dues. You're doing, you're doing the small clubs. You're doing the dives.
Yeah.
But it seems to me like A, people are really appreciating it, and B, you're having a blast. So my question is, do you wake up in the morning and worry about what's next? Or are you just so wrapped up into making the music at this point and so relieved that you're making the music that you want to make? Or do you think, can this independent label get me there? And what is that to you at this point?
Well, I mean, it costs a lot of money to make music.
Yes, it does.
And that's, I think that's the thing that's tricky. And
so you're going to write for Syncs? Are you going to do all that stuff? Or are you?
Well, I think that I have skills as a writer and I have issue with writing in different environments, you know, like, I think that's cool. I think if anything, as long as I have my artist career and my artist project set aside and protected, I think that writing with other people can only enhance my own abilities, even if it's a different genre, different style.
Yep.
I don't think there's any harm in that. And I would love to just kind of be a fly on the wall in situations or be able to contribute to something that people love.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Okay.
And what it is two of your songs on the outside. And then you get to pick anything you want in between.
Okay.